is Matt Mosley, and it is in the aftermath of a 26-15 Cowboys loss. They fall to 6-6 on the season. Ed Werder out at the stadium today. You'll hear from Glenn Stretch-Smith in a little bit. He was out at the stadium as well today. We're in all parts of the country. I happen to be in Florida for Thanksgiving. But, boy, we got our focus tonight is on the Cowboys. And, Ed, you were right there. You had a huge report before the game that got a ton of play, given the fact that Jerry – your report basically was that a source had told you that Jerry and Steven had decided that that Jason Garrett would at least coach the rest of this season. As you started to see this thing unfold, did you start to wonder if they would stick to that?
Well, the actual terminology in the report was sort of what you paraphrased there, with the additional remark, no matter what, that they were going to allow Jason Garrett to finish the season no matter what. And they certainly tested no matter what when they came out and uncharacteristically put together a first drive of the season that was not the result of a turnover, scored a touchdown on their first possession, and then turned around and surrendered 26 consecutive points and showed very little fight other than Dak Prescott late in the game, you know, going out of his way to initiate contact with the corner on a third down scramble. But yeah, I was a little concerned, and I wondered if that would cause them to rethink that decision and commitment. And that only became more possible in my mind when we were standing outside the locker room and Jerry and Steven walked off the field and into the locker room before the game was even over. And then once the players and coaches finally gathered in the room, but before the door could be shut, we heard some shouting in there and heard at least one player scream, "We're better than this," which to me is the truth, possibly, but certainly also an indictment of either the coaching staff or the players that they're not better than that, that they are indeed a 6-6 team. And so, I did wonder if Jerry might have changed his mind, but instead he came out. He spoke to the media at length, and he said without equivocation that Jason Garrett is going to be his coach. And the primary reason that he cited was he thinks that this gives them the best chance to, as he said, win out, win the division, get a home playoff game, and see what happens. He thinks that making a coaching change would leave him with zero chance in that regard. I think there are a lot of Cowboys fans that would like to see them take those odds and try to do it. If Jason Garrett can't get you to a Super Bowl when you're 13-3, and he can't get you there when you're 12-4, it's hard to imagine he's going to get you there when you're 6-6.
Yeah, and that's maybe a further indictment, Ed, of the staff that they put together, that there's nobody seemingly ready to take this thing over. I saw some people saying, Rashard may bring something, but you know, his secondary and his passing game coordinator on defense and play caller, he got sliced and diced by Josh Allen. I mean, that was this was a Buffalo team. I noticed on Twitter, you know, one of our buddies, Mort, reminded you, hey, yeah, it's a pretty good team, Buffalo. Well, and you may have pointed this out, the truth is they had not beaten a winning team all season.
Right.
You know, they had sort of made their bones.
The Cowboys have had five chances now to beat an opponent with a winning record, and they failed every time. This was Buffalo's second opportunity, so they're 1-1 in that regard. And so, you know, after the game, my take was that somehow the Cowboys are a first-place team, but they're also one that can still be compared based on their most recent demonstrations of ineptitude the past 5 days, that they can be compared to the only winless team in the NFL, the Bengals, because the Cowboys are 0-5 against opponents with winning records, and only the Bengals in the entire NFL are worse than that. So I think that's the reason we saw a lot of the frustration beginning to become readily apparent, as obvious as the failure responsible for it today.
Yeah, and you heard the screaming out there. You know, it's been reported now that was Michael Bennett was doing a lot of that. And Ed, that's an interesting story in itself. The fact that Michael Bennett has only been around for three games, about 3 weeks since he's arrived on the scene, and now apparently he is the vocal leader. And I don't know if that's maybe you could look at it from the perspective of, he's been there, he's won a Super Bowl, maybe they'll follow him. But you could also say, hey, it's strange that a guy who just got here is the one being the voice of all of this. I don't, it's hard to know what to read into that. I don't know if it doesn't feel like it's, necessarily going to inspire the team, but it was seemingly a very emotional. And in looking at your tweets and then kind of listening to Jerry, as we'll let our folks listen to him, what an emotional scene down there. Jerry with tears in his eyes. I mean, this is a rough time for the Cowboys. And at some point, go ahead.
Jerry, when he came out, did concede that he spoke to the players as a group as well, with the coaching staff in attendance. And Michael Bennett spoke. That does seem a bit odd. But Dak Prescott also spoke, and this is most definitely his team. And he said that the message was to sort of, remain together. He said that he would not want to be in this predicament because of the characters that they have in the locker room. He wouldn't want to be in this predicament with anybody else. And when somebody said, what makes you think that you're going to be able to come back from this? And he said, it's not a question of if, we will do this. And I thought it was interesting that 5 days ago when they lost in Foxborough in a more competitive game, I guess, than this one was at home against a lesser opponent, although Buffalo was certainly the far superior team in the stadium today, that, Jerry basically is changing his tactics. He tried expressing his frustration, criticizing the coaching staff, sort of putting everyone on notice in a very obvious way after the game last weekend. Now, 5 days later, he comes out and he tries an approach at the opposite end of the spectrum, which was, he was conciliatory. He showed faith. He was, trying to demonstrate that this gives them their best chance of meeting their preseason goals. But ultimately, I think the fact that he's not making a coaching change is a result of one thing and one thing only. They're in first place. As badly as they've played, and no matter what happens between the Eagles and the Dolphins on Sunday, the Cowboys are going to go into Week 14 at Chicago next Thursday night, and they'll be guaranteed at least a share of first place. And so I think the fact that the Eagles have had just as woeful a season as the Cowboys have endured is really the only reason Jason Garrett can expect to be the head coach through the rest of the year. Teams just don't fire coaches when the teams are in first place. I think the last time it happened, based on a request I made to Elias, was 1951, involving two people none of us have ever heard of. Yeah, it even predates my appearance on this planet. So that's how long ago that was. So I really think that Jason Garrett can thank the Philadelphia Eagles for the fact that he's going to have his job for the rest of the season. To your point about the staff, they clearly don't have anyone that they feel is ready to take over, even in sort of a tryout basis. You could argue Chris Richard, and that's the name that's going to get mentioned because, he's prominent. He's interviewed for head coaching jobs with other teams. But, as you suggested, they've also gone four straight games here without a takeaway. The longest such streak they've had on defense in the last 3 years. So it's not like his side of the ball has been exactly dominant either. And I think the other thing, as far as the offense goes, they're in this very challenging stretch now where, last week they played the Patriots, who are the number one ranked scoring defense in the NFL, and they didn't score a touchdown against them. They scored one meaningful touchdown today against Buffalo. Buffalo's the number three scoring defense in the NFL. And the Bears, who they play a week from tonight, are the number four ranked scoring defense in the NFL. So this offense and this team are really going to be challenged going forward.
Yeah, and Ed, you've been a voice that has said in the past, you finally sort of came around as we started to talk about Dak as a possible MVP candidate. And that seems like so long ago now, or a couple of weeks removed from that. But this seemed to be a day when Zeke looked extremely effective early. In the first quarter of the game, he had like 56 yards rushing. I mean, he really looked fast. He looked faster than he had in several weeks, maybe all season. And it's hard to get any sort of feel for how this team calls games. Now, I know when they got down, you know, whatever it was, 26 were down at some point, 26-7, and they had to throw the ball. But at some point, there seems to be no rhythm or rhyme or reason to what they do, because today it seemed like, at least early in that game, the running game seemed to be there.
Well, I spoke to a coach who's a play caller for another team in the NFL who have played the Buffalo Bills this year. And the thing he told me was that you really have to be determined to grind it out against Buffalo, that you can never, ever flinch against this team, and that this was a game that they had to allow Ezekiel Elliott to be the dominant figure on their offense. And it seemed like that's what they intended to do in the first quarter, because I think they threw him two balls, he had eight rushes, and then in the second quarter he has two carries for no yards. And you're right about the lack of a rhythm. There's no predictability, and I think it all comes back to one thing. This team is a team that doesn't do anything particularly well. There isn't anything that they have that they take into a game knowing they can be effective doing. I think in previous years, they always felt, almost without exception, they could impose their will and run on people. And now that they become more of a pass-oriented offense, with Dak Prescott throwing, 49 passes today and ranking among the league leaders in that regard, you know, I just don't think there's anything they feel to do well. And I think troubling for Prescott is, you know, he had another game where he turned it over on consecutive possessions. This is a player who's always been risk-averse, who believed in protecting the football. And that's not what we're seeing right now. And the Cowboys don't create turnovers, as we mentioned. So with the two turnovers that Dak Prescott had today, and really had three because he fumbled on fourth down and the Cowboys recovered it, but that was obviously meaningless that they recovered his fumble. But the Cowboys in these games against non-division opponents are -9 in turnover margin.
Goodness. I mean, that's a remarkable number. That's where they sit right now, and I do think it does speak to how they end up in the place that they are. Having you at these games, and especially on Thanksgiving, it was going to be interesting to see which way Jerry went on this. Let's let our folks take a listen. Ed Werder with the audio, and you'll hear him involved in some of this. But this is Jerry, a little different kind of Jerry, clinging to his man, Jason Garrett, in the aftermath of an embarrassing loss. There's really no other way to put it. The Bills, you could say, oh, great, they're you know, a 9-3 football team, and you would be right. But the truth is, to lose at home on Thanksgiving, another really embarrassing loss by Jason Garrett. Here is Jerry Jones.
Jerry, you've been very vocal in support of Jason over the years, and very harsh in criticism this week. Where do you stand now on the job security of Jason Garrett?
Well, I'm saying here, I know Jason very well. I've had a wonderful opportunity to spend a football life with him, so I know him very well. And you know, without a doubt, you've seen it, nobody wants it to go. And I'm going to tell you this right now, he's got my back too. And I know that too, and he does have my back. This is disappointing. Before we started this game today, we said this team's going to be tough to beat. Buffalo's a good team. We certainly got the momentum. We got the wind taken out of us there in the back part of that second quarter, and we just didn't get it back. They got it done. That's all I'm saying. This is not the time. For me, I'm looking ahead at another ball game, and I'm looking ahead at winning five straight, and helping write a story that they'll talk about how it looked like you were down and out and got it done. I mean that. That's the way that I'm operating. Every decision that I make over the next month will be with an eye in mind to get us in the Super Bowl now. And I would normally say, you're really smoking something. I normally would say that, but I know the room. And I see the room, and I'm the one that okayed and put the coaches that are in that room in there. And I believe in this group, that certainly was something that causes you to have to check, because you have to reach deep to find out what you're thankful for. That's what that does.
Jerry, with all due respect,
the fact that you're all, more
there's no due respect here. You don't even have to have it.
It seems like you have tears in your eyes. Can you just talk about your emotions right now?
Well, I have it because I've been in a very emotional locker room.
Okay.
With a lot of other guys that are emotional.
Okay.
And that's what it is.
It's part of your support, Jerry.
Right now against winning teams.
Excuse me?
They're 0-5 right now against winning teams. What gives you confidence that they're going to win out and get to a Super Bowl at this point?
I don't know that I would inject confidence anywhere in this thing relative to just the hanging on the mathematical chance, but hanging on the fact that that group of people in there, I know that at various times over the last several years, I've thought they were absolutely exactly what I wanted to be in the room with as a part of a team. And so I'm based on that. Those names haven't changed. And we saw Cooper walk off today. I was worried about that knee. Would I have had the outcome that way and not been able to say his knee's all right? No. I'd rather have the outcome and his knee being all right, because we have still got a chance, and it's really because of the makeup of these guys. You can call that an indication of just how much I know.
You talk about the makeup, though, but you called out the coaching staff, and they come out and go down 26-7 to the Bills at home. That didn't seem like they answered the bell with the makeup that you're talking about.
If I had thought that calling somebody out or going in there and giving them a Newt Rockne talk would have made any difference as to how we execute and how we do, then I'd bottle that and sell it to a lot of different places. Okay, that's not the way this thing works. That's not how it works at all. The guys in there, I've been with Jason in a lot of ups and downs, and back before he was coaching. So I've been with these guys, been with many of those players in there. And so this is certainly a downer, but I'm a part of a room full of guys that are having downers in there. And this isn't being too soft. If I thought going out here and taking each one of them and butting my head against them with their helmet on and mine off would help matters, then I'd be doing that. What I'm doing is realistically saying, do these guys have a makeup that we can start right now and win these games one by one and get where we might want to go? I agree it's outside.
Right.
Okay. But if we do that and win it one by one, we've got a chance to be in the right side of the playoff call.
How much of your belief is that you have a better chance of doing that with this coach than without him?
What?
In other words, fire Jason Garrett, you don't win more games.
Oh, I wouldn't make a change and give us a chance to do what I want to dream about doing. I wouldn't do that for love nor money. We'd give us zero chance if we didn't have him.
So do you think it help or hurt to call him out publicly this week ahead of this game?
Well, I sure didn't think it would hurt or help. I was talking about an assessment from my perspective. Now, I want to say this one more time. Everybody here knows that Jason and everybody out there wouldn't be out there had I not okayed it or did it. And so I really have earned the right to sit here and talk about what we didn't do, how we didn't do it, because we all know that it's a part of a critique of me.
How do you assess this?
But I will say this. We sure have. I've been told all my life adversity gives you an opportunity to really write a hell of a story about how to come back. We've given our chance the best foundation to turn around and have a great story that I've seen in a long time for us to turn this thing around and end up with some kind of plus.
How do you assess their response today, though? I mean, to say that they didn't respond, whatever the reason, to a home game, a back-against-the-wall situation today, you know, losing by double digits to the Bills, and how do you assess that?
Clarence, what I'm doing, because I have to deal within the framework of my computer and my experience.
Okay.
And so that the way that I'm reacting and the decisions I'll make okay, are based upon the way I've always handled things or way I've evolved. And the way that I'm going to handle this is encourage everybody to basically look to the possibility of winning out and end up doing something that people will write about 30 years from now and being a part of that. I like that story tonight as I eat my turkey. Better than having to choke with it going down.
Why does it sound like a fairy tale, though, more so than something realistic?
Well, it's just that. But it was a fairy tale when I got to buy the Dallas Cowboys. It's been a fairy tale life for me. And so I have always dreamed out there on the edge. I really have. And I've been confused many times between my dreams and reality, but have surprised my own ass by finding out there was some real reality in what a lot of people thought I was dreaming about.
What did you see in your players when the Bills were scoring 26 consecutive points? I assume, based on the decision you're making, that you didn't see any quit.
Well, I saw turnovers. I saw mistakes, the kinds of things that caused that. I saw a real momentum builder for the Bills and a deflator for us when we missed field goals right before the half. I saw us when we had great field position a couple of times and traded with them on who had the field position there, and we didn't come out on that. I saw all of that. When you come back out, it's so important that you, if you can, establish that momentum when you come back out for the second half. We didn't do it. They did it. And so we all know the technical reasons. We know the turnover. We know the ratio of turnovers. We didn't have any. I mean, we had them. They had them. Again, there's no lack of will anywhere here. There's no lack of will, and I haven't in any way implied there's a lack of will. The facts are that we had thought that this would be a great opportunity at home on Thanksgiving, with the nation looking at it, for us a chance to look good against the Bills. And when we came out and made the first drive, I thought, well, okay, that's just like thought about it. Obviously, the Bills had a lot more to say about it than that. They are a good team. We know they were a good team when they came in here. To their credit, Beasley showed us that he was a top player. We always thought he was a hell of a player. We just thought he cost too much.
Jerry, is it fair to say that the decisions you made put this team together going into the season, what you've been through with Jason, you feel it's best to ride that out through the remainder of this season, and that's why there won't be a coaching change before the season is done?
Well, I'm just not going to make a coaching change. And all of the things that you talked about, plus maybe many more, would have to be in my thoughts for there not to be a coaching change. The real world is that it's not impossible that we could step out here and play a game that we improve from, and we've got a caliber of team that has a chance to do more than just not show up in the playoffs. If we could get to the playoffs and we could get it on our side of the ledger, get a home field game, which is what we're going to have to do to get there. In my mind.
But regardless of the results moving forward this next month, you're sticking with Jason Garrett.
Well, I'm going to do the same thing I've always done when I get a setback or get my butt kicked. And I'm going to get up in the morning, and I'm going to look for ways, and I'm not going to panic. I'm going to look for ways to improve the situation. I'm still glad that when I get up in the morning, I can look for ways to help our team. One of them is not a coaching change. One of them is not reworking the offense or the defense. Those aren't alternatives for us to be ready to play over the next month and give us a chance to be what we want to be. But if we stay healthy and other contenders might not, and all of a sudden we start ginning and we start getting some turnovers, then those games will turn out differently. And I like our bet there. I do. Even though we haven't played well the last three games, I like our bet. And I'll include, as I said, nobody's satisfied with how we played, even when we played Detroit. It's not taken away from anything. But we can play better. And if we can play better, we've still got the base health of this team. And we got the personnel that we can put out there. And we've got some coaches, generally coaches, here that I believe in. I believe in. It's not working the way they thought it'd work or I thought it'd work, but I believe in these coaches or they wouldn't be here to begin with.
Jerry, did you speak to the team after the game?
Yes, I did.
And what did you say?
But again, I'm not going to get into that. That's between us.
It sounded like they got pretty vocal in there with some players were yelling. Did that surprise you at all?
No, not at all. And everybody in there that had anything to say have earned the right to say it. You didn't have anybody, period, that didn't have the right to express themselves and communicate with them.
Did you like seeing that from them?
I don't even think about it. Think about it that way. Those are very, very sensitive times in there. You know, it's been said and it's true. You see what everybody's about when we get in circumstances like this.
There he is, and interesting to hear all that from Jerry. And before we get to Stretch, Ed, just a few more things. As the I was in a different part of the country, and it was going back to something you said. I ran into some Eagles fans tonight. And there was just they were just celebrating like crazy. I mean, the fact that the Cowboys have just absolutely kept them in this thing, and now they get to go through an extremely easy part of their schedule. You and I have talked about this along the way. They got 2-9, Miami. You've walked us through this thing. It's just right now, you'd almost have to be just a bunch of deadbeats not to pass up the Cowboys and put them away at this point. Although I still don't think we have much faith that the Eagles can do that.
Well, you know, between the time the Cowboys go to Philadelphia and play the Eagles in week 17, the Eagles are going to play three successive teams that are currently 2-9. And two of them are starting rookie quarterbacks in Washington and New York. And the other team, is Miami, who they play this week, and it hasn't really mattered who their quarterback is. And I guess the way, you know, Jerry Jones sees it with Jason Garrett and to look at it from a different perspective is I'm either going to have this incredible story where we overcome all of this and we go to the playoffs and have Super Bowl success. He says, that's what I'm imagining. That's what I'm dreaming. I know you may think that I'm sitting here smoking something, but I know the people in that room. And he gestured obviously toward the locker room, but I guess ultimately either that's going to happen or the Cowboys are going to get a better draft pick than they ever imagined.
Yeah, exactly. It could go either way. I mean, one thing today, Ed, and we hadn't really talked about it much, Josh Allen just throttled this team. I mean, from a running, we sometimes think about, why don't they let Dak impose his will? He had that one run today. I saw you tweeting about it. Hey, one guy really wants it. Maybe that'll, inject something into the Cowboys. Well, that guy was doing it throughout the game. I think he only had, he ended up with like five incompletions the entire game. I mean, it was,
yeah, five,
one point
19,
I looked up and he was like
94.
19. Goodness gracious. Yeah, I mean, I just thought he was so efficient, and of course they gave him time, and he just stood in there, and sometimes he was just so quiet. I mean, did you notice how quiet his feet were? Like, he just stayed in there and, like, barely just kind of waited. Oh, my goodness. And then when he needed to run, he would run.
A lot of people questioned when he was drafted because he played at Wyoming whether, he would be successful in an NFL style of offense or whether he could complete a high enough percentage of his passes. But the people who believed in him and projected success for him in the NFL see him as kind of a Ben Roethlisberger type of player. And you mentioned his mobility and the fact he ran for a relatively uncontested touchdown today against the Cowboys late in the game. He's got more rushing touchdowns since he entered the league last year than any other quarterback in the NFL, even more than Lamar Jackson, who may well be the MVP for the Ravens at quarterback. And I think you would also be remiss, we would be remiss at the Doomsday Podcast if we didn't mention Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley,
huge day.
Jerry saying after the game, hey, we knew he was a great football player, we just thought he was too expensive. You know, Cole Beasley was trying to get more money than guys like Danny Amendola and thought he should get Julian Edelman-type money, and the Cowboys just simply didn't see that. And I would say the Cowboys replaced him well with Randall Cobb. I would argue Cobb's a better, more versatile player, but Cole Beasley had 6 catches for 110 yards and a touchdown. He's the second former Cowboy player to record a 100-yard game in their first meeting with their former Cowboys teammates. The other was Andre Holmes, who also did it with the Raiders exactly 6 years ago, also on Thanksgiving Day.
My goodness. Yeah, it is. He was really impressive. I love that. I mean, you know, you got to admire that one, that first touchdown to him where Allen's, rolling to his right, and he just throws that thing right back just in perfect rhythm. And it is wild how quickly things can change in this league. I mean, you were doing, you know, you're a week removed or a week and a half or 2 weeks removed from doing this awesome tattoo story on Dak, and he's talked about as being a MVP, and this guy is now, I mean, like Josh Allen just outclassed him today. He was the best, he was the better quarterback on the field. He really was. That doesn't mean Dak's going to go on and, you know, have a poor career or anything like that, but it just shows you how quickly things can change in this league. Ed, before we get to stretch, I did want to say thank you to Randy Hudson, the Hudson Financial Group. They've become such a huge part of what we do at Doomsday, and they're easy to find on Facebook. You just look them up, Hudson Financial Group. And one of the great things about it, Ed, they have they're an independently owned company. And so what Randy Hudson, former big-time lineman, offensive lineman at North Texas, can do, he can put you – he's not beholden to a certain company or a group. And so when you've got property casualty insurance, life insurance, all of that, you've got access to a bevy of different places. And that's an exciting thing. And Randy Hudson has been doing it for a lot of years. And the great thing about him, too, is – Once you kind of get in with them, then you can start expanding, and they'll help you with your investments, your estate planning, and so many of those things that are sort of complicated in life, they simplify, and they just do an incredible job. It is Randy Hudson and his staff at Hudson Financial Group, and we want to put you with Randy, and so just continue, reach out to Ed or I, and we'll get you with Randy. And he does an incredible job and has a great staff out there. Okay, it's time now to hear from Glenn Stretchsmith, our former Cowboys scout and coach. And he weighs in on this, and boy, he has some very interesting things to say about this coaching staff. Here's Glenn Stretchsmith. And Stretch, you attended this ball game. You and Edward are both there and witnessing in person. Let's start from the beginning. I mean, it looked like a great start for the Cowboys. It looked like they were going to come out. They marched right down the field and score. At that point, Stretch, I mean, you had to be feeling like, okay, maybe some of these, maybe some of Jerry's fire and brimstone took hold a little bit, but it certainly didn't hold up.
Yeah, and the thing that really bothers me is, you know, Zeke got the ball 8 times for, I believe, 56 yards in the first quarter. He got the ball 4 times the entire remainder of the game. Not get it. You got the fourth quarter where you're way behind, but you were running the football and ran right down the field and scored. I mean, at some point, guys, I'm not the guy who likes to point fingers at coaches. Coaches don't make plays, but at some point, it is the coaching. It is the inexperience of the offensive line coach. It's the inexperience of the coordinator. It's the inexperience of the tight end coach, the quarterback coach. I mean, to me, it reeks of inexperience with what's going on. Also, from the special team standpoint, second-year coordinator on the special teams, it really is starting to –
be one of those situations that is, it's magnified. I mean, I don't know how many times Kellen Moore, he's in 11 personnel 85% of the time. Well, you put another tight end in the game, wham, one of those defensive ends, put a fullback in the game, run ISO. I mean, at some point, guys, we're going to have to say it's coaching here that is becoming magnified, and it's becoming more magnified week after week after week. And again, you won't hear me say this very often because the players make the plays. But you know what? Right now, this inexperienced coaching staff is getting exposed.
Now, Jerry said before the game, or at least it was reported, that some source from the Cowboys and our own Ed Werder reported it, that under no circumstances would they fire Jason during the season. Is there anything you saw out there, Stretch? And Jerry's already said after the game, no, he thinks that would be awful to do. But did you see anything that makes you think Jerry might change his mind and make some changes? Is there anything you could do coaching wise in the middle of a season when you're 6-6, or are you just kind of stuck?
Well, I don't think there is anything you can do, Matt. I really don't. I mean, there's not anybody on the staff that you could say has extensive head coaching experience. Yes, Marinelli is 1 year. I believe they went 0-4 when he was in Detroit. I mean, there's not anybody on a very inexperienced staff that you could turn to. You can't bring anybody else in here. So it really is one of those situations where you're going to have to ride this situation out. And I've never been for firing Jason Garrett. I really haven't. But when I looked today, I saw a tired, defeated, whipped football team. And I mean whipped. Physically got an ass whipping. And I'm too old to sit here and say butt, bottom, or bobo. They got their ass whipped. And that's how, you know what, hopefully Jason can rally these guys. But again, a very tired football team. That's how they looked. And I don't know how to say it any different than that. It really is one of those situations where you just shake your head and say, goodness. I mean, the offensive line playing high. I mean, just standing up. Defensive-wise, schematically, what they're doing, how they're – I mean, the lack of ability to cover Cole Beasley. It's 2nd and 20, and they let him run an inside dig for 19 yards. I mean, kind of stuff that to me is unheard of. And so I think the shine is off of this offensive coordinator, and I certainly think the shine is off of the secondary coach and the guy that, quite frankly, is calling the plays on that side of the ball. But I don't believe there's anybody, Matt, that you could go to and say, hey, you know what, we need a different voice in the room. There's not that person on this staff.
All right, Stretch, what do you think can be done? You said what this is, and you're not typically going one to go after the coaches, but you certainly brought it up here. Is there anything Jerry can do? He's saying he's not going to make a change with Jason Garrett, and that would put them in a really bad spot. Is there anything he could do? He fired the O-line coach last year.
Yeah, no, you don't have. There's not any experience, Matt. There's nobody to go to. I mean, with the way this staff has been set up, you can't, there's nothing you can do. I mean, it really is such an inexperienced coaching staff that there is nothing, I just don't, Marinelli's the only guy with head coaching experience, and I believe he went over 16. So I don't think you can, I just don't see that happening right now. And it's unfortunate because there's just not anybody that's experienced enough that could go be that guy. So you're kind of stuck with what you got. And I, again, I'm not one for, you've never heard me come out and say, hey, I'm ready to fire Jason Garrett, or, I'm ready to get rid of this entire staff. But right now it's ugly, guys. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And they have been outcoached. They're getting outcoached. And I don't know how you can get this thing back on track. The way that this sits right now.
Cowboys lose 26-15 to Buffalo Bills. Talking to Stretch, part of our Stretch Plays segment. All right, let's look at this other quarterback, Josh Allen, comes in here and throttles the Cowboys. I think he only had 5 incompletions.
played beautifully, ran the ball, ran it in, had that unbelievable first down where he picked up a fumble and then just kind of ran over a couple of people from the Cowboys to get the first down, showed a ton of effort. On the other end, rough day for Dak, threw for a lot of yards, but a lot of those were empty numbers. What would you say about Dak's performance, given the fact he really could have had even more interceptions? One was negated because of a penalty, and I mean, he had some really poor throws in this game.
Yeah. He, this throw that really stands out, it's a fourth down throw. I mean, he didn't throw the swing out there and hit. You know, he wasn't able to hit Zeke on that route. But, you know, the other thing that I really noticed, guys, was the ball coming out late. I mean, on some of those comeback routes, it like the ball sat in the air forever. He didn't get three, you know, take the big three with a hitch and let it come out natural. Now I'm starting to think he looks uncomfortable, not setting his feet. There were some inside throws that he just is not making. And so, all the way around, we talked about this. And normally, you know, I go in and we grade, Matt, every position every week. But I think you had such a poor game all the way around. I mean, really, there were some selective players that made a few plays for you. I thought Sean Lee played okay. I thought Covington played okay on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive line did not protect well. I mean, to me, Jason Witten, he just doesn't have that zip, that ability to separate in those tight situations. Cooper played okay, but I mean, you didn't get much out of Gallup. Cobb had couple of okay catches. Running back, I thought, played well and well enough to really continue to hand him the football. And for whatever reason, you know, the coaching staff decided not to go that way. So I just saw a really lackadaisical effort from the Cowboys. And I just don't know that I've seen this, Matt, in a long, long time. A team that looked tired, defeated, didn't want to play, a sideline, you know, didn't have any zip, didn't have any real bang to it. It was a hard watch. I mean, you picked a good week to go down to Florida and sun yourself a little bit, because this one wasn't good.
Has the coach lost the team? Can you go that far?
Well, I don't. You know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I don't. You know, I really like to watch the game. I don't like to get too close to it. That's why, I'm not a guy that goes to practice, because they don't really show you what's going on at practice. I don't go down in the locker room afterwards and see guys that kind of get frustrated and that kind of thing. I don't know that he's lost the team, but it really concerns me that they didn't come out and play with a more sense of urgency, play with a little fire under them, because quite frankly, it really is. Even after this loss, it's all in front of them. If they can figure out a way to win a couple of these games and beat Philadelphia, as crazy as it sounds, I mean, they could still be in the running to win the NFC East. So it's crazy, but I just, at this point, you're kind of handcuffed all the way around. And I think, Jason's got it. You got to hope that he can rally the troops and try to get something done here, because it was ugly today. I mean, it was just a bad effort all the way around. And when I say bad effort, guys, I'm telling you, Alpha to Omega, I could not give you a winning grade on anybody on this football team. And again, even, they got beaten special teams. I mean, I don't know if you could see it on TV or not, but Matt, the field goal at the end of the half was tipped. And, I can't believe that they can't clean up whatever these issues are. From if nothing else, clean up your special teams. And, it was ugly again. So, I mean, out-coached, outplayed, a tired football team. I mean, hell, it really is. If you're a Cowboys fan, this was embarrassing. That's the only way to put it.
Under Tom Landry over Thanksgiving, I think over the years, something like 11-4-1, and under Jason Garrett now, I believe it's 4-6. The record falls to on Thanksgiving. with Jason Garrett as the head coach. Stretch, one area that you've been highly critical of, the secondary. The Bills obviously had some success both throwing the ball to the running backs, and then Cole Beasley, former Cowboy, has a breakout type game. Was that a combination of people who were victimized on that? I mean, was that just Beasley finding some open spots in what the Cowboys were doing, or did you see anybody specifically getting beat on a lot of those plays?
Well, yeah, he did. He beat up on Jordan Lewis. I mean, you know, I've been championing Jordan Lewis and really, you know, wanting to see him play more. And quite frankly, today we saw why he didn't play more. The thing that frustrated me more than anything was on his first TD, on his first TD catch. I mean, Xavier Woods has got the middle of the field closed. He sees Beasley run kind of a little option dig route, and literally he is standing flat-footed, never gets off the mark to even touch him as Beasley kind of jogs in the end zone. I mean, again, when Jeff Heath is not in there, this secondary stinks. There's no other way to put it. I mean, Awuzier, you know, Jones got called on a big PI. It really is. They have been exposed, and for whatever reason, that they are not. They're just not playing any better. And maybe, you know, I think the one area that I really kick myself when I think about how I evaluated this team to start the season is I didn't do a great job of evaluating this secondary. Because this secondary, it is a pig, and there is no way to perfume it. They stink. it's just that simple.
But you mentioned it. They have a chance. They're 6-6. The Eagles are sitting there, and they'll have an opportunity to try to get to 6-6. Is there any part of you right now, after seeing a dead team out there, that thinks they could rally, or have you almost seen enough to think that even the dead beat Eagles? Because you know the Eagles have a really easy schedule. They've got a bevy of 2-9 teams ahead of them. Is there any reason you feel like the Cowboys could somehow rally here?
Well, the only thing that gives me any glimmer of hope is that the Eagles don't have. With Jackson hurt, I mean, they don't have a receiver that can run out of sight in a leap year. So, I mean, if the Cowboys were, you know, that Cowboys-Eagles game for the championship of the NFC East is shaping up to be a hell of a pillow fight. I don't know how to put it any different than that. I mean, it really is. It's going to be a damn pillow fight in Philadelphia. But, the Cowboys, if they can get back to running the ball and playing more physical, get back into a little bit of a rhythm. Offensively, they can do some things. But, I mean, defensively, guys, schematically, what I'm seeing right now, it's almost getting worse every week. And it is. It's hard to watch. Hard to grade. It's hard to watch. It's hard to keep an open mind with because I've seen it so much. I mean, literally today, Byron Jones actually turned his head and touched the football. He touched him. I about fell out of the press box.
Yeah.
I said, "Jay, even Joe Trahan." He said, "Jesus, Stretch, he touched it." Now, can you imagine? I mean, the damn defensive back just touching the ball kind of gets you fired up. So it seemed
like a big moment.
It's scary. It really is. It's scary. The lack of ability to get turnovers, turn the football over, get your hands on the ball. You know, quite frankly, those two turnovers and two missed field goals today, you know, really turned the whole momentum and pendulum of the football game. And then when you're tired, you're not playing. They didn't play well, guys. And there's no other way to put it other than it was bad to watch, and it was a really poor effort, coaching, playing. It's one of those things where if I was Jason, I'd flush this game. I wouldn't even show it to the players. I really wouldn't. I'd say, okay, we got to move on. We got to figure out a way to turn the page and move on. And I wouldn't show it to them. That's my feeling.
Yeah. This team deserves to be flushed. I think that's well said. All right. Well, we appreciate it. We've been a little bit all over the country.
tonight. All our folks are traveling, but Stretch, great to have you, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, guys, have a good one. Thanks, man. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you too. Happy Thanksgiving. There it is, Stretch Marks, and they were not high marks for anybody. As you heard, Ed Christian Covington, he was about the only one that Stretch kind of liked today. One player that we have called for to see more of is Jordan Lewis, the Cowboys cornerback. And quite honestly, today, that was the player Cole Beasley exposed a lot. I mean, Stretch was absolutely shocked, Ed, as you were doing all your TV for ESPN after the game. He was very shocked to see Byron Jones actually play a football, turn around and knock a football away. So that really caught him off guard. But for the most part, this is a defense that they can't get off the field. And after what looked like they were going to apply some pressure and be pretty good up front today, they just allowed all sorts of yards, and they just kind of, when Buffalo needed to get something done, they were able to do it. So your point earlier that I think is so well said is the fact that the Cowboys just don't, at least last season, you could sort of point to an improving and a strong defense. Even early this season, there were some defensive numbers that were impressive. There's just no part of this team that you can point to and go, this is a lockdown great aspect of this team. Certainly not the special teams. Funny thing is, though, what people still keep talking about is the great talent on this team. And maybe at some point, Ed, we need to have a conversation on, are we overrating that talent? Because that's what people still come back to, and Jerry comes back to the same thing. We've done a great job putting talent on the field, and it's not getting the job done. Well, I mean, at some point, we have to decide, is it as talented as we thought they were?
I happen to think they're enormously talented at many of the key positions, and Jerry has paid many of those players that sort of price. And one of the things that, you know, I think people should not lose sight of here is the Cowboys have been very fortunate in that in the salary cap era, they're now getting a fourth year of Dak Prescott at an exceptionally low cost for a starting quarterback, $2 million. You know, he should be making big money by now. They even anticipated that. And so this is only going to get more challenging once that happens and once Amari Cooper gets paid. But I think it is a talented team, and that's the reason I believe that Jerry's going to fire Jason Garrett or let his contract just run out so he doesn't have to fire him, doesn't ever have to have him in and say, Jason, I've decided to fire you. He's just going to say, Jason, I've just decided that we need our players need to hear a different voice. You've been here for 9.5 years. I'm giving you every opportunity. We're not going to renew or extend a contract. So we wish you well in the future. And then technically Jerry didn't fire, Jason Garrett, his good friend and somebody he almost considers a member of his family. But I think Jerry, at the end of the season, as the general manager, Jerry is going to say, I put together a great team. That's what they told us at training camp. You were there. You remember. They thought this was the most talented roster that they'd had since they won the Super Bowls in the 90s. And here they're sitting 6-6 and don't have a single victory against a good team. And the reason that they can't beat good teams is because they're too busy beating themselves. They make too many mistakes against good teams. You can't do that. And then you add in some of the miscalculations and game management issues that Jason Garrett, you know, still brings all these years later. And of course they're going to lose. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, it happened. Let me ask you this: if they finish 8-8, does Dak still make $32 million a year?
I know some people thought when Jerry made his remark the other day about his hand isn't cramping from writing all these checks, that he was directing that at Dak Prescott, who's not signed his extension offer yet. I don't think that at all. I think he was directing that again at Garrett and the coaching staff, saying, I put together this enormously talented, expensive roster, and you give me 6-6. That doesn't work for me. and I'm prepared to make a change when necessary. But I don't think the Cowboys are at all anything but fully committed to Dak Prescott being their quarterback for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and when whatever price that ends up being, they'll still go ahead and get that done. And this is an extremely disappointing day for the Cowboys. Ed, I'm just so happy that you're home. You had a lot of stuff going on at the stadium after the game. Then you get home, you do the Doomsday Podcast. This has been a good day of work. What I'd like to do now is kind of send you on a trip to Colorado to be with the rest of your family. And I just feel like that I owe that to you. And I hope we can find
Colorado under all that snow.
Are you going to be able to get out tomorrow? I hope you will.
Well, it's not up to me. I'll be at the airport with my bags and my wife, and then the rest is up to somebody else. But hopefully when we're airborne and we get over a big, giant, rectangular shape out there, we can look down and figure out where Colorado is underneath that blanket of snow.
Oh, man, it's a great place, and I know you love it, and I hope you get to be there and see Henry. And there's a lot of excitement out there with another one on the way. My goodness. I mean, that's when you got two of them, then you're already a grandfather. But I mean, that's exceptional when you get to that point. But that's exciting. The Doomsday family is very excited for you. You and Jill have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. Great work from you today. And I really appreciate it. You really covered my rear while I was out here at Disney World, you know, doing my thing.
No worries. Glad to do it. Glad to be at the game and represent our enterprise as well as we can. And further good news, I've already been assigned the game in Chicago on Thursday. So we'll be on location and we'll have another version of the podcast right after the game that's full of insight. And if I can get my phone anywhere near Jerry when he speaks, we'll get the latest on the coaching staff and whether Jason Garrett will indeed survive yet another week.
That's right. They'll go to Chicago. Ooh, pack your warm stuff for that. Chicago gets a little ugly this time of year. For Ed Werder and Frito Nation Productions, I am Matt Mosley, signing off for another episode of the Doomsday Podcast. Good night, everybody.
Shining, stockings have been hung. You're praying for your daughter, lighting candles for your